theme music from the video game Doom, introducing us here to another episode of Conservative Casual Friday, a weekly Blog Talk radio show with your show host, Andrew Harrod, where we like to examine important issues of the day into Doom mood, a Doom state of mind, as we're looking at never-ending COVID-19 mania, this Corona Doom, as described by William Briggs, a former professor at Cornell Medical School and prolific author, operator of the website Statistician to the Stars. And we've had him on a year ago to talk about COVID-19, and he's going to join us again. Well, welcome back to the show, Bill.
Great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Well, and of course, I loved reading experts turn a pandemic into a catastrophe that you co-authored with others. That was an excellent book. Well, we've gone on now here. We're in 2021 since you last spoke in 2020 on the show about COVID-19. How many people have died from COVID-19 in America and the wider world? Is this pandemic comparing with past pandemics?
Well, that's a good question. So there's all sorts of official estimates. You could look online and grab those easily, you know, like they say, anywhere from 750,000 or so or more up to, some people say up to 1 million. It's hard to tell exactly how many people died of the disease because of the reflexive nature of this thing, people wanting to describe any death of anybody who has any kind of positive test as dying of COVID when they may have just died with COVID or died of just one more thing added to their list of things that were pushing them out. I mean, it's still the case that the average age of death is around 80, which is right around the average age of death anyway. So deaths have gone up. I mean, they have gone up last year. They've gone up this year from what we might have expected without this overreaction, without this panic and so forth. I mean, this disease is killing people. But as far as how it stacks up with other pandemics, it's right in line with what we've had before. There was, I think I mentioned last time, or I write about it often enough, there was the Asian flu of 57, 58, and that killed about 4 million, up to 4 million people worldwide. But at a time when the population of the Earth was about a third of what it is now. So, you know, relatively speaking, it was a much worse pandemic. But people just don't remember it because there was no worldwide panic, and there couldn't have been. The technology to create the worldwide panic did not yet exist. So this panic would not have existed either without that technology. If we didn't have Zoom for the ruling class to have their meetings and conduct their business, for instance, there would be no panic. Life would have continued more or less as normal, except for those getting sick, those relatively few getting sick. And we would never have really noticed this. So this is a pure technology-driven panic. And there's really no argument about this. I mean, the global propaganda machine is controlled in a very direct way to create the panic, you know, and to drive business to their websites and so forth of all these propagandists. And that's also new. That technology to spread these kinds of things is also new. We're making use of technology right here too, in order to try to counter all of this fear and ridiculousness. But, you know, our efforts are, of course, somewhat smaller compared to their efforts. And before I forget, I do want to mention, a decade after the Asian flu was the Hong Kong flu, and that killed maybe up to 4 million people too, but probably a little bit less. So these are comparable pandemics. They come, you know, every 10 to 15, 20 years, we get them. And normally, they don't cause this level of absurd overreaction, but we're able to have this level of absurd overreaction now, and so we are. We're doing it because we can and because of the people wanting to leverage this panic into all sorts of things. I mean, we've both seen that all of the oligarchs have grown immensely wealthy during this past 2 years. Governments and bureaucracies have grown tremendously in power and reach, and so they're in no way do they have any incentive to calm down. There's no incentive whatsoever for them to stop their madness.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. You speak of Zoom and so forth. Yeah, I guess so. That's an interesting point that you know, with such technologies, as you say, of a people, you know, rule. Upper income people, they can rely on such technologies, telecommute, work from home, and so forth, and so they don't have to then face any hard choice of, you know, hey, look, if you do some sort of lockdown or something, you know, your business is going to crash. Whereas, of course, not everyone has that possibility, but that technology is indeed a new state of affairs.
Yeah, that's it. If we didn't have it, if there was no Zoom. I think Zoom was the number one thing, but if there was no backbone internet the way we have it all over the world, there would have just been no panic. The elite, the ruling class, has to rule. They have to carry out their rule in some way, and if they didn't have that mechanism, when they created these lockdowns, if they created these lockdowns even 20 years ago, they would not have been able to do it. They would have not had the opportunity to have face-to-face meetings, conference calls and the like, wouldn't have been enough. They needed these mechanisms, not just that, but for tracking too. And they needed to have all of these other, testing, the mania for testing and the cheap and the globalization that created the testing and all this kind of stuff, this testing, which drove a great deal of the panic. So all of that stuff is caused by, I don't want to say that the technology caused it, but if the technology was not in place, we would not have had this panic. It would have been impossible for them to do.
Well, that's another interesting point. So you say, you've written a lot about testing, really, juicing up the fear here. You just, you know, test everyone and anyone who has any sort of COVID positive within. Has the amount of testing during this pandemic been greater than past pandemics, and why is that so?
Oh, certainly. Not even close. That's another one of the things that the globalization allowed, the creation of these cheap test kits and PCR tests and the like. All that, none of that existed before in previous pandemics, and that's just, it's gone nuts. It's gone through the roof. I created a panic index, basically looking at the number of tests that are administered by the number of positives that come out. Ideally, of course, you would have everybody who felt ill and they went to get a test, they would have that test confirm their illness or not. So if you just divided those two things, you'd have a ratio of about one, you know, plus or minus. But we're up enormous numbers because we're testing. I think that I can't even remember what it was at some point. We're up to like almost 3 million tests every single day. Ridiculous levels, absolutely ridiculous levels. That's just the United States. Of course, these tests go on all over the place. People have multiple tests for their jobs and the like. They test over and over and over and over again. And with the idea of false positives, which used to be a very common topic in medicine, being completely lost, completely out the window. And so all of this testing, the testing itself and people going to get tests and the reporting on tests and the fact that tests exist also drives the panic, because it's just, you're seeing everybody do this. You think, my God, I got to go and do this stuff myself. And so it's just another way to keep this thing going.
You have testing kits, then you mentioned there's been, through technology, that testing kits are much more available now than in the past. There's been significant change there.
Exactly. The whole globalization, which allowed that kind of stuff to happen, made these tests simple, cheap, and available. Simple as that. PCR existed for a while now, these other kinds of tests, but they didn't have the capability, the throughput that we have now to do all these things. And so, again, this is just a technology, an aid of juicing the panic and not doing anything to solve the problem itself. So it's all of this technology has gone to juice the panic and done nothing or very little to aid in helping people.
And, of course, you talk about, you know, you can just go online and just see reports on this stuff all the time, whereas in the past maybe you might read a newspaper story or watch a nightly news or something, and it wouldn't be that omnipresent.
Well, that was another thing. We wrote about this in the book, too. The news is news. The propaganda is, we must never use the enemy's language, by the way. We must never say news when we mean propaganda. We must never say journalist. We must say propagandist or regime spokesman or apologist or something.
Mm-hmm.
But that aside, that whole process of generating propaganda is now automated. People have forgotten this, but in the case, the so-called case mania of 2020, where they were reporting on, because testing was going through the roof, they were reporting on each new supposed case, a case. These are not cases, but I'll explain that in a minute. But they would input this data into their systems, and it would auto-generate headlines and stories. And so you could go to Google, and you could put in any number you wanted, any number at all up and through the, oh, I don't remember, it was all the way up into the low thousands, any number you want, so, you know, 1,224 cases, new cases reported, put that into Google, and you would find a headline that it matched that exact number. Because everywhere, all over the world, everybody was reporting all of these things at almost a near instantaneous time to when it was happening. So these things were just auto-generating. The propaganda wave was just huge. And this stuff was just being flooded over the Internet, over the radio, television, everything. So this testing drove this so-called case mania, and they used that propaganda to juice the panic even more. Now, I've said this a million times, but up until 2019, a case in medicine was a person who was ill and required treatment or sought out treatment. An infection was something else. An infection might mean you caught a cold, but you don't need treatment for a cold, so you stay home or you just go about your business and take an aspirin and some chicken soup and you're done. You're not a case. A case is more than a positive test, or used to be. Now they've changed the wording to everybody with a positive test is a case, and that made it sound very dire. If you talk about someone having a positive test, they're a new case. That sounds like they're going to have to strap to a machine and have oxygen pumped into their and through a tube and all this kind of stuff. When they don't tell you, and it still happens to be a fact that the most common treatment for corona doom is to go home and wait it out for
mm-hmm.
most people under the age of, say, 65 or something.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a positive test, they say stay home, and if you develop any symptoms, come and see us. But they never mm-hmm. report on that. But we must all have experience by now of people in our families and friends who have tested positive and seen what they have gone through, which is very little for most people. So, again, this is just propaganda, propaganda juicing the panic.
Well, now, looking at these vaccines, what are the vaccination rates in the United States and around the world? What sort of rates have we got there, and what effect have the vaccines had?
Well, the effect is different than how many. I mean, in the United States, it's like 95% of everybody 65 and older have had one or two shots by now. The definition of fully vaccinated, as you know, is undergoing rapid mutations. We have new variants of the word fully. It used to mean two shots. Now it means three, or it did up until last week, and now they're saying four. Israel is already at four, so they've lost their minds faster than anybody else, but they're a smaller country. So that's one thing. So, but it's at least 95% of everybody 65 or older, and it's like 85% of everybody 17 or older. So most people have had vaccines in the United States, so this mRNA or adenovirus gene therapies, I should call them. It's the same in most countries. The vaccination rates are at least 70% in all the developed countries. And obviously, you have to be careful. You have to look at ages. I mean, this is a disease primarily afflicting the old. And there is some efficacy against severe disease and death. It's nowhere near what it was reported initially. They had initially reported, like, people like the fabulous Fauci were touting 100% efficacy against death or against hospitalization. Well, they were lying through their teeth. They all they know how to do is lie. And I remember in December of 2020, I predicted that rates would be 50% or below. And they're now about 30% and dropping. And dropping. The vaccine for old people, they're somewhat effective against death and hospitalization. The efficacy is only about 30%, and it is dropping through time. The effect wears off, and there are the side effects to be worried about. The younger you are, the more likely there are to be side effects. The side effects are double in the youngest, like 5 to 17, compared to like 17 to 24, the risk of myocarditis, pericarditis, various blood clots, people dropping dead from their heart, throwing a clot or something. This is happening because these you have to understand, this vaccine is not a whole – most of the vaccines that people are using, most of them, In places in Europe and America, they're either mRNA or like an adenovirus or some other type of gene therapy thing in which they make your body. They make your body. They get into your cells, and they make your cells produce a version of the spike protein that mm-hmm. is so deadly on the virus itself. It's not a whole virus vaccine. It's not a virus, an old-fashioned kind of vaccine where they would produce these vaccines and limit a version of the whole vaccine from being able to reproduce. There are those that exist out there, but they don't exist in America yet in any widespread sort of form. But Sinovac, the Chinese have their own. The Taiwanese have one. We have, in France, they have Valneva, which is one of these type of vaccines, and we have one called Novavax, which is similar to this kind of thing. None of these are approved or in widespread use or anything like this. We've gone full bore on this gene therapy idea instead, like AstraZeneca, Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, and these kinds of things. So these are very dangerous vaccines for the young, especially given that the young themselves are not suffering from corona doom at any interesting rates. Of course, no one wants their own kid to get it and catch it and die. That's terrible. But the young, for instance, are at twice the risk of dying from pneumonia. You don't see this reported anywhere. They're at 10 times the risk, 10 times the risk of dying in a traffic accident in any given year. 10 times the risk of dying from than dying from corona doom. So, and it's easy to fix that. We could get that rate down to zero for traffic fatalities very easily. Just bar kids from driving in cars.
Right?
Well, that's a simple solution. That's better than a vaccine. There's no side effects, direct ones anyway. So we could solve that problem and save a lot of kids' lives by barring them from driving in cars. But why don't we hear a hue and cry about this, and instead we want to vaccinate the young? It's absolutely preposterous what we're doing when we know that there are side effects out there and potentially deadly ones or at least life-threatening ones. And it's astonishing that this is dismissed. You see these people saying, oh, you can get over myocarditis, it's treatable. Don't worry about it. You know, don't worry if you throw a clot. You know, you can get treatment for that kind of stuff. It's more important to get a vaccine for a disease that almost certainly won't kill you. The thinking has gone completely out the window. There's no rational thought, really, from any quarter on this, and it's very disturbing. It's just all part of the global insanity. I mean, there are areas We both know. You know, I mean, there's Sweden, there's Florida, there's Texas, there's other places in the world that don't have this absolute mania. And there's no mandates, there's no masks, there's none of these lockdowns, there's none of this stuff happening, and they're doing very well, in better even than the places that have lost their minds. And you bring these places up, you say, what about Sweden? And they pretend not to have heard you. The subject has changed. Or they say it doesn't matter. Why doesn't it matter? Okay, what about Florida? Why doesn't Florida matter? And on and on. So it's just that people talk themselves, rulers and others talk themselves into these positions, and the experts that they align themselves with are married to their models, and it becomes that nobody wants to admit error. Nobody wants to admit that they've made a massive, massive mistake. And so they have to continue until something else comes along, which it will eventually. Either we just all tire of talking about this, which I'm sick to death of it. I'm sure you are, too, that distracts us. We move on to something else.
The vaccines is going down. Why is that?
I'm sorry? You broke up.
You say the effectiveness of the vaccines is going down. Why is that?
Well, lots of reasons. For one thing, it's not a whole virus vaccine. It's just that spike protein. It's a version of a spike protein based on a model. They have different versions of it depending on the vaccine that you're taking, the manufacturer, I mean. And it's just not a whole virus vaccine, so it's not able to build up enough immunity in your own system that can actually handle the virus when you really do get infected.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. Simple as that. So that's why there may be. And look, we've had flu vaccine for decades upon decades upon decades. Up until 2 years ago, people were still dying of flu. The flu vaccine did not solve flu and flu pandemics. Why would we think that this vaccine, especially in its new, you know, most of them were rushed into production in the hopes that they would do good, and they were all relatively untested in general populations, and they just don't turn out to be that great. And there's all kinds of reasons for it, and along the lines that I've discussed, and it's sort of acknowledged in many places now. That's why they're moving towards the idea of booster shots. That's why we're talking about number four right now. And the Moderna CEO came out a couple of weeks ago now. I can't remember the date. He's now suggesting annual boosters, just like flu shot. It's just not going to be enough. These types of viruses, respiratory bugs that spread like this, they mutate too rapidly, and you're just not going to be able to stop people from dying from this. Just like you are not able to stop people from dying from flu, we just have to stop caring about it so much. That's the problem. The idea of the zero COVID, which a lot of leaders, rulers, adopted. It's pure insanity. They thought that this disease could be eliminated, as in no more deaths, no more hospitalizations, completely gone. It's preposterous. It's just complete lunacy. But that was the official policy, and still is official policy of many places. And it's not going to happen. It's never going to happen. They created this disease, and now we're stuck with it. And that's just the way it's going to be. It's going to just be yet another one of those things in the background that's killing us off. It's not nearly as deadly as heart disease or cancer. The cancer and heart disease, I forgot exactly the numbers now. Is it 2 to 4 times as many people every week die of heart disease and 2 to 4 times as many people are dying of cancer? And that ratio is increasing. But, you know, in other words, many, 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 many more people are dying of heart disease and cancer, and you don't hear about it. When's the last time you heard about those type of deaths being reported?
Right.
You know, and they're killing younger people.
Right. Right, indeed. And, well, what about these new variants? I mean, we're now on the Omicron variant. What effect have these new variants had? I mean, do the vaccines work against them? Or there's also been some talk about, like, this Omicron variant is really actually very mild. Would that be a positive thing that, you know, I've heard before that when viruses mutate, they tend to get weaker as they mutate?
That's true. They tend to. Very true. That's the case. In this case so far, we just saw a report the other day from England. Nobody has yet died of the Omicron, which is really disappointing the propagandists. So when it came out, when it was announced, I guess it was, what, 2 weeks ago now, three? It was a tremendous boon for propagandists because people were starting to the numbers of deaths from Corona Doom were dropping fairly good, and you know, and this is sort of disappointing, and they weren't getting enough juice out of the panic anymore, and until this Omicron was announced, and that was wonderful for headlines for a good week, 2 weeks, and that got everybody all nervous, and oh my God, it's look, so what? The more variants we have, the better. Because it's inevitable that they're going to just evolve into more easily transmittable but less harmful. Everybody has to remember, a coronavirus is one of the causes of the common cold, all right? And everybody's going to get a coronavirus in their life. It is impossible that they're not going to get a coronavirus or a rhinovirus or any of these other viruses. And it's good that you're able to get a variant that is not as toxic as so the alpha variant of the Corona Doom, because you will develop immunities that will be very useful for you to fight off the harsher versions. The harsher a virus is, the faster and more easily it kills, the less easily it spreads for the obvious reason, because the person's dead. And the less toxic it is, the less deadly it is, well, the easier it spreads. Well, this for the very same reason, because you're still alive. And there's just no stopping a respiratory virus. You just can't do it. None of the methods they've ever come up with are going to do it. The only possible way is to, you know, isolate everybody in their own little cube for a month where nobody is allowed out. On the other hand, though, this won't even work because there was a report out of Taiwan yesterday or the day before. This poor bastard who was working on some mice that had Corona Doom got bit by one of the mice, and he developed the disease and apparently is doing fine, as most people do. But so mice can get it. All right, so animals can get it. What other animals have it and carry it? Who knows? So there's no way. Eliminating this is it's not just fantasy, it's evil at this point to keep insisting on it when we have such knowledge that it's never going to happen.
Well, in thinking about, you mentioned, thinking about lockdowns and mask policies, have they been finally debunked? I mean, is there any evidence whatsoever that any lockdown or mask policy has had any effect?
Yeah, lockdowns have had some effect. I mean, they've destroyed people's lives, they've lost people's jobs, businesses, lost people's health, suicides, drug use, opioids are now up. Lockdowns have had a lot of effect. None of it good. Listen, I've said this a million times, too. Why is it now every year, like clockwork, in the Northern Hemisphere, deaths of all causes peak around New Year to sometime in mid-January? Now, why is that? Well, the very simple reason, we all start going inside and sharing all these bugs. We lose our vitamin D production to a large extent. All those reasons. So in other words, we all go inside and share all these viruses with each other, among other things. And what did lockdowns do? They say stay in your house, except to go out to go shopping and essential, sort of essential. The government now gets to define what liberty is, what liberty is not, what is essential, and why you, Andrew, are non-essential. You're just sort of superfluous. The government has decided that you and your tasks are not really needed. But it concentrates people together, and the viruses spread more easily. Lockdowns have the opposite of effect that they're meant to have. Masks are absolutely useless. Absolutely useless, and we've known it for a century. There's been study after study. There's the big, even in the coronavirus here, there's been the Danish study where they equipped people with the N95 masks, taught them how to use them, gave them free masks, taught them how to change it several times throughout the day, which you should do if you want to keep them, have any efficacy whatsoever. And then they looked at people without and with these masks, and there was no difference in infection rates. The masks are just useless. It's just a pure... They do spread fear. You look around, everybody's wearing this mask, and they spread fear. They give the idea that there's something deadly in the air, like there's a miasma, and you don't dare go out without this mask or you're surely going to become infected. They look at you without a mask, a person with a mask, and they're terrified because they figure, you know, it's just like the vaccine. Your vaccine doesn't do anything for you. Your mask doesn't do anything for you. Your vaccine and your mask protect the other person somehow. So we now all believe in magic. It's all become magical thinking. What did Kamala Harris say? Probably the dumbest person in all of government. We need to protect the vaccinated from the unvaccinated. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. It's amazing. You can't. Your vaccine suddenly stops working when you stand next to a person who's unvaccinated. How is that? Nobody's able to describe scientifically how that's possible. Yet they believe it. And yeah, that's official policy. Hence the mandates.
Mm-hmm. And the vaccine, it doesn't stop transmission. It only helps you survive if you get the disease.
Yeah, that's another lie that they told. You're not going to get infected if you're vaccinated, which is impossible. What do you think? The vaccine, you inject the vaccine, and now all of a sudden you develop something like an electrical aura or force field around your body that zaps bugs as they come near you? No. I mean, that's absurd. How is it that they started telling this lie? People who know better. I mean, these are experts, capital E experts, physicians and professors and all this kind of stuff, and they say this stuff, and they know they're lying, but they tell the lie. Because why? I don't know. It helps reduce transmission in the sense that if you get infected, and it is efficacious, supposing it is really efficacious, you clear the virus quicker. Right, because your body then knows how to handle the virus. It goes after the virus and stops it from reproducing as easily. Therefore, you have less viral load yourself, supposedly, and therefore you are able to transmit that virus at a reduced rate. So it can reduce transmission that way, but it cannot stop it, especially this vaccine, which is not that efficacious. So it's a leaky vax. And so, therefore, yeah, maybe it reduces transmission a little, but it's not. It can't stop it, okay? So it's preposterous to think that this is going to be some sort of cure-all. And we've known this for quite a while, too, in all of the numbers. And we have the numbers coming in, and responsible authorities should have seen it. I mean, there are numbers. The conclusions from them are obvious. Why? But it's now a political and magical question, so it's out of the realm of reality, and we have moved into pure politics, pure cult-like behavior. So I don't have an answer how to get out of this. I mean, I have no solution except for we need something that's going to come along to distract us into some new terror, whatever they'll invent. I don't know, white supremacy perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, well, I guess it brings to mind, you know, all the criticism people had that people would scream about COVID-19, but then if you wanted to do, like, you know, or something in the neighborhood, you know, then all of a sudden no one cared about wearing masks anymore or social distancing. So, our politicians would go to parties or whatever, and it didn't seem to really care. You mentioned, So in the United States, we have about 70% of all adults are vaccinated. How high are natural immunity rates now?
Yeah, that's a good question, too. This is another insanity. The CDC lies to themselves. Boy, these are a bunch of idiot bureaucrats. They somehow convince themselves that the vaccine provides greater immunity than having had the disease itself. And they did this based on one lousy, terrible, stinking study that a huge number, I don't know how many, dozens and dozens of experts signed their name to. It was a shockingly stupid study. But so some countries, unlike the United States, have adopted the somewhat sane policy that if you are recovered and can produce test results showing antibodies, why, that's equivalent to being vaccinated. Well, it's better, of course. I mean, having had the disease and recovered from it is certainly better than having the vaccine. And it has been so for every disease we've ever known. So we should never have been vaccinating people with the disease, who have recovered from the disease, because now it becomes very difficult to give you the true rate of the vaccine efficacy. Because if I'm including in that group of all the people who are vaccinated, a lot of people who've already had the disease and recovered, what's really providing the immunity here? Is it the disease? Is it the vaccine? Is it the vaccine plus the disease itself? We don't know, right? I mean, you can't measure the size of the effect because you've confounded the data in really ridiculous ways. So that's just obvious. That's just obvious. So the number of people who have had it is very large. I wrote in the book because the infection rate was somewhat high, and now with these other variants, it's even increased. The CDC even came out, this is about a month ago now, and I don't know if I have the exact right number, but they estimated, I think it was like 146 million Americans who have already had corona, all right, mm-hmm. who have already had COVID. I think the number is higher than that. I think it's pushing closer to 200 million, if not even higher than that. Eventually, everybody's going to get this disease if they haven't already had it. So, you know, I mean, there's, again, in order to do these testing on people, in order to test real rates, we're not doing this in any kind of old-fashioned scientific manner whatsoever, where people should come in and be tested for antibodies before getting vaccinated, and it's just not being done. It's not being done. In some countries it is. In some countries like the Netherlands, for instance, although they've become quite tyrannical in some of their lockdown and mask policies, they at least have the sanity to include natural immunity, acquired natural immunity. So why the United States hasn't? Well, we're just more prone to wild flights of fantasy than some other countries.
You know, for 146 million people is the estimate in America, is the estimate from the CDC. So that's really half the country, basically. And you think it's even higher? What level?
I think it's higher. I think it's higher because the rate, the infection rate. They're going by the. Well, it's all a guess. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're wrong. But it has to be somewhat higher if the infection rate was so large, okay, because this thing just spreads so easily. And the new variants, of course, will spread even more easily still. And don't forget, maybe it was about a month ago, they were worried about another variant before the Omicron that was – this is just to show you how stupid we've all become, just stupid people who are being promoted and put into places of authority. A new variant was causing people to have COVID – symptomless COVID. This was the fear headline for about a week. Symptomless COVID. Oh, my. Beware mm-hmm. symptomless COVID. You could have the disease and not even know it. Yeah, now, isn't that terrible?
Yeah, I mean, what's the problem?
It's pure magic. You're oh, my God, I've got it. It sort of made you into it. Like a zombie or something, but you have no symptoms. You won't even know if you're one of them. I mean, we should be welcoming news like this. We should be triumphantly touting this. Oh, my God, this is great. Now it's finally just fading into the background. That should be welcomed by everybody. And that shows you that that kind of news reporting and its opposite shows you we're deep into magical thinking and rationality is out the window. For instance, every time there's a new study that comes and shows that masks don't work, they're just useless. Mask mandates are stupid. And mass criminalization are unethical. We report this stuff, and you would think it would be greeted with cheers. you think people would smile and say, you know what, this is great, I can take my mask off, they don't work. And instead, there's anger. People become vicious when you tell them the mask is not needed or the mask does not work. They hate hearing this. They refuse to believe it. They start calling you all sorts of names and everything. It's beyond reason. I don't understand this. Why wouldn't they celebrate something like this? Instead, they treat it as if it was you know, white supremacist Nazis trying to get them to do some terrible thing. It doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I noticed some people around here where I live in Northern Virginia, some individuals wore a mask, and, you know, you even see people inside their car. It blows my mind, you know, what are you doing inside the car with a mask on, or people going outside with a mask on, and I just wonder what these people are doing. It doesn't make much sense to me.
I don't know what they're doing either. They think it's magic.
Mm-hmm.
They think it's magic. I was walking by this in New York City. I was walking by this young man. This was now a few months ago. But I wasn't wearing a mask, and he was, and glasses. And he saw me coming, and he turned to the side of a building, his face away, pinched his nose, and waited for me to pass.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
of fear. Yeah. Is the direct responsibility of our idiot, immoral rulers. There's no way anybody should feel that level of fear. That's beyond tinfoil hat stuff. It's just ludicrous. And we allow it to happen because they are able to use this fear that they themselves generated, they themselves caused, for political gain.
Mm-hmm. What's going on in Australia? I mean, there they've set up even like internment camps for people who are COVID-19 positive. And we see all these, you know, protests and riots out there, and the police are going. Discuss that and what effect those policies have had.
Well, the apologists will say, no, they didn't build the quarantine camp for the Corona doom. No, it was an old oil company site or something like this. Well, so what? It doesn't matter who built the damn thing. People are being quarantined against their will, not for having the disease, although there is that too, but for being next to people suspected of having the disease. So they're trucking these people off on mere suspicion of being next to somebody who might have had the disease, and they're interning them in order to stop the spread, supposedly, of the virus there, because they have insanely adopted a zero COVID policy. And is it working? No, it's not working. It doesn't do a damn thing. The rates just go up and up. It's there. Now they're coming out of their winter into their summer, so the rates will naturally drop because of the sun and everything else that goes along with it. So it doesn't work, but the authoritarianism is just incredible. It's not just them. It's also like Austria and Germany. In Austria, they have a proposed law. If you're not vaccinated, they're going to truck you off to a concentration camp for a year,
mm-hmm.
and also fine you some exorbitant fee. Well, now, because the vaccines will become mandatory. So what happens in this concentration camp and you still refuse to get vaccinated? What are they going to do then?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if it's mandatory, you can intern the people until they die,
mm-hmm.
or, well, you can just eliminate them the old-fashioned way, and that old-fashioned way will, of course, stop them from spreading the coronavirus. It's amazing how we've let ourselves. The only lesson as it's well been said many times, the only lesson we learn from history is that nobody learns any lessons from history. It's just Germany and Austria doing this. It boggles the mind. It just boggles the mind. I mean, given their history, it's good. I guess maybe they just have a robust sense of historical continuity that they're going to go down this route. But that's what they're doing.
So in Australia, you're sent to this sort of a quarantine camp just because you've come into contact, who's been identified as having the COVID virus, and then they fear that they don't want to spread, so they'll just take you and send you there.
Yep. That's it. Against your will. You have no choice. The police with armed police will come and truck you away. And we saw that we saw the news, a couple of kids, two or three teenagers, whatever. And every prisoner of war has a right and a duty to escape or to attempt to escape. So we should applaud these teens. These teens escaped, got out, and they were eventually caught. But they didn't have the disease. They tested negative, and neither did they have the disease when they were interred. They were only suspected of being near somebody who supposedly had coronavirus. So that's the level of absurdity we have reached. But you got to understand, you and I are simpatico on this, but most people are not. Most people are still dead scared. After 2 years, the level of fear has barely abated. And most people are in favor of these tyrannical restrictions and punishments and worse. You got to understand, people can vote this stuff in. All it takes is 50+1%, right? And all of a sudden, what is immoral becomes moral. And that's one of the things. I have a new book. I write about this exclusively. Everything you believe is wrong. That's one of the many voting fallacies that we all know, but yet somehow forget when it comes down to things. So there it is. I don't know. I don't know what brings us out of this. The sunshine will bring us out in the Northern Hemisphere. Deaths will start dropping. Deaths are going to continue rising, as they always do, to January 1st, January 15th. This depends, plus or minus. And then they'll start dropping. And then, of course, they'll start taking credit for this as their policies that have done this, when naturally it's just the inevitable result of the disease already having been spread to everybody via their voluntary lockdowns of going inside when it's cold out. And there you go. So the disease will have already spread, and the most susceptible are dying, and then, therefore, deaths will drop after those people are gone. That's what happens every year, year upon year, despite our best efforts. We've developed the idea that somehow medical technology can save us all from any death. And it becomes almost forbidden to talk about death at all. And this is because all crises are spiritual, and this is a spiritual crisis as well. I mean, when you have nothing, when you have no belief in except in your own powers, life is all you got. This temporary life is all you have, and therefore you must cling to it and in good health. Otherwise, there's nothing else for you. And so that's why this overreaction has taken place to a large extent, I think, and why people are so terrified of an extremely low probability death. So we need to, if anything, we need to address the spiritual crisis before we can address the medical one.
Now, you say, are the deaths, so can we say that the pandemic has sort of really run its course? I mean, the crisis has passed, and it's just going to kind of linger on like this?
No, it's going to continue on forever. It's not going anywhere. It's going to. There's no pandemic anymore. In any case, there's just now deaths that are following along on this disease, and they're going to swell every winter in the Northern Hemisphere and the summer in the South a bit when people go inside into their air conditioning, and it's going to continue to be with us just like flu used to be.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, maybe some of it is flu just being misascribed. Flu, of course, has disappeared these past 2 years mysteriously, according to the WHO and according to the CDC, the World Health Organization. Flu is just sort of taking a powder. Not there anymore. Interesting. So, maybe we're over-ascribing some of these corona doom deaths, or maybe truly flu is gone, except at very low levels. So corona doom will just be there among the diseases that we have. If we're going to concentrate on trying to eliminate this disease and not stopping the fear until it's completely gone, we'll never stop. The panic will be with us forever and ever, forever after.
So you say that the rates of death from flu have really dropped. So is that because are Corona sort of replacing the flu, that people are dying from Corona as opposed to just flu?
Nobody has. There are theories that there are some theories along that line. Only one virus can predominate of this type. That may be so. There's technical reasons for that. I'm not sure. It could be that because everybody they're testing for Corona Doom and not testing for flu. When you go and get tested, all these the testing mania, there's no flu test. You're getting tested for Corona Doom. You may have both diseases simultaneously, and you're only the Corona Doom is the one because you have the positive test, so that is the one that gets blamed for things. There's probably some of that going on. And flu testing itself is just down because people aren't thinking of getting a flu test, not when this is going on, so there's some of that. So, yeah, all that. And it's just, but it has dropped off. I mean, there's a small number of people who are still being ascribed as being dying from flu, but globally that number is just dropped off the map. You can look at the plots. I show a plot, you know, pretty much weekly from the WHO. They update it every week, and it flatlined in 2020 around May, and it hasn't really risen since.
And is the survivability from the disease improving? Are better treatments being found to combat if you do get sick?
Yeah, well, all that's true. So first of all, when you know, this is a man-made bug designed to kill easier, and it did. And the most susceptible people, the weakest, died first. So we're left now with increasingly being left with people who are more robust to the disease, and therefore it has a harder time killing them. So that alone accounts for some of the increasing survival rates. Some of the treatments that they did not want you to try because that became political quickly on too, and another insanity that they'll have to account for. Some of those are now being allowed to being tried, and they have some efficacy, but they're not panaceas either. You know, you could try ivermectin and HCQ and all these kinds of things. And when I had Corona Doom, I had quercetin and a lot of vitamin D, and these have some benefit, no question about it. But they're not cure-alls. You know, people understand now that obesity, we knew from almost the beginning obesity was one of the big things, but nobody wanted to acknowledge it for one reason or another, body positivity perhaps. Now I guess people are more willing to talk about that. So you could do yourself a great favor just by not being a fat slob. You know, eat better, eat more meat, eat, you know, that kind of stuff. You could just improve your diet and you can improve your chances. So all that's true. But, you know, it's a virus. It's a respiratory virus. The vaccine doesn't cure it. Your body itself cures it when it can. Acquired natural immunity is probably the biggest reason. Like I say, at least the CDC's number of maybe half the population has already had it, and I say probably more. And therefore, well, if we've already had it, and as new variants come along, we're relatively or mostly or completely immune to them, so the death rates will drop because of it too. So, you know, in another year or so, it should fade to the traditional background levels of flu or something.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so okay, so hopefully in a year at least, that would be the light at the end of the tunnel here.
Well, the light's right here. The light's been surrounding us all along. All we have to do is open our eyes. We don't have to do all this stuff we're doing. None of it's making any damn difference. The panic is, panic kills. Panic kills. Panic is stupid. Panic is irrational. And panic can't be the official response. We could stop the panic now like many localities and nations have, and we could do just fine. We just can't concentrate on this disease like it's the only damn thing in the world. It's not, and it's absurd to say it is.
You say, has there been any final determination, any sort of conclusive determination where this COVID-19 disease came from? I mean,
Well, let me put it this way. There's every indication that it came from accident. I say accidental, but you know, I'm willing to be corrected on that. But accidental release from a lab, from these gain of lethality experiments that our scientists love to engage in. That right there is insane too. That's another one of our great insanities, that we would engage in gain of. They call it gain of functionality. Well, what's the function that is going to be gaining? Well, ability to kill. So gain of lethality. So they use a euphemism. So they have these gain of lethality experiments that our government, including the fabulous Fauci, funded, and were conducted here and abroad in China, and the thing got out, and that's every indication is that's the case. Now, the reason they say it but are timid about it is because if it turns out that they acknowledge that, then what? This thing has killed millions of people.
Mm-hmm.
So who's going to pay? Who's going to pay? They don't want a shooting war with China.
Mm-hmm.
We could certainly handle the people on our end, and should, but these people have become cult leaders. And so it's a matter of religion at this point. To what we should do with these people, and I don't know.
Well, what is the point of such gain of function, gain of lethality research? Is that just purely for like military purposes? No.
You got to understand. No. It's nothing so dark as that. It's even worse. It's hubris. Nothing but hubris on the point of scientists. They have to have papers. They have to publish. They have to have research. They have to have grants in order to survive. And they have nothing else to work on. So they make up these things and they reason to themselves, you know what? If we create deadlier viruses, why, then we could create cures to these deadlier viruses so that when these deadlier viruses emerge in the wild, well, how could they? Because they're man-made. Then we could cure them. So were any cures derived from this gain of lethality experiments that they've done? No, not one. So it's pure hubris on their part. That's the only reason that a lot of research happens. And it's scientism run amok. Scientists don't have to read Mary Shelley. They don't have to read Frankenstein or Prometheus Unbound. None of that's required reading, so that they have no philosophy. They have no morals. They have no ethics. And they just plunge forward on this stuff because they can, and for no other reason.
Well, you know, you talk about trying to get a message out against this sort of insanity. How's your book, The Price of Panic, that you co-authored, been doing? Have people been reading that, and is that really changing people's minds?
Well, people have been reading it. It's selling okay. Is it changing people's minds? I don't know. I don't know if it's just people who are ordinarily sane wanting to find that there's other people who are sane like them. It's good to feel that you're not alone. So for that, at least, the book has done some good. Robert Malone, he published a book about his experiences in the Trump White House dealing with people like Fauci and Ed Burks and these other nitwits. Who are running the pandemic response, and their utter refusal to ever admit any kind of error. So, you know, that book helps. It exposes what these experts are really like in person. But unfortunately, it all becomes partisan. It all becomes politics, and you're able to say, well, that was because it was he was a Trump appointee, therefore it doesn't count. You just dismiss it all out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
That's how people are able to keep their level of fear up.
Well, this is interesting once again. For our listeners out there, you've been listening to another episode of Conservative Casual Friday with your show host, Andrew Harrod, and we've been discussing the never-ending COVID-19 mania with William M. Briggs, a former professor at Cornell Medical School and a prolific author. You can read more about him at his website, Statistician to the Stars. Well, William Briggs, thank you for joining the show.
That's been my pleasure. The site is wmbriggs.com, by the way.
All right, then. Excellent. And check out his experts turn a pandemic into a catastrophe. And for our listeners out there, tune in next week for another episode of Conservative Casual Friday.